Do you feel a shiver up your spine from fear? Yes, it's another story from the Nightshade Diary. You know what that means. Check under the bed and make sure no one or nothing is there. Is the closet door securely shut? Then leave your disbelief behind. Amp up your imagination and hang on tight for another ride into terror and mystery. And like all good horror stories, just imagine it's a dark and stormy night. And remember, screaming like a little girl is permitted. The Road to Mitlantecuhtli by Adobe James. The ribbon of asphalt, once black, now gray from the years of unrelenting sun, stretched out like a never-ending arrow shaft. In the distance, mirages, like dreams, sprang into life, shimmered and silently dissolved at the approach of the speeding automobile. Rivulets of sweat poured down from the face of Hernandez. The driver, earlier in the day, when they had been in the good land, he had been congenial, expansive, even sympathetic. Now he drove quickly, apprehensively, almost angrily, not wanting to be caught in the bad land after sunset. Semejantes los buitres no tienen gordo en este distrito, he muttered, squinting his eyes against the glare of the late afternoon sun. Seated next to him, the man called Morgan smiled at the remark. Even the vultures are skinning this lousy land. Hernandez had a sense of humor for that reason, and that reason alone. Morgan was sorry that it was going to be necessary to kill him. But Hernandez was a policeman, a Mexican federal cop, who was taking him back to the United States border, where Morgan would be handed over to the criminal courts to hang, twitching at the end of a long Texas rope. No, Morgan thought, and knew the thoughts to be true. They won't hang me this time. Next time, maybe, but not now. Hernandez was stupid, and it would be only a matter of time before he made a mistake. Completely relaxed, Morgan dozed, his manacled hands lying docilely in his lap, waiting. It was almost 5 o'clock before Morgan, with all the keen instincts of the hunted, sensed his moment of freedom might be approaching. Hernandez was becoming uncomfortable, the result of 2 bottles of beer after lunch. The policeman would be stopping soon. Morgan would make his move then. On their right, a range of gently sloping foothills gradually had been rising from the flat surface of the desert. Morgan asked, pretending boredom, "Anything over there?" Hernandez sighed. "Quién sabe? Who knows? The plateau on the other side of the mountain range is supposed to be worse than this side. Es imposible. No one can exist there except a few wild Indians who speak a language that was old before the Aztecs came. It's uncharted, untamed, uncivilized, ruled by Mitlantecuhtli." Now, slowly, as shadows lengthened, the land was changing all around them. For the first time since leaving Agua Lodoso, they could see some signs of vegetation, mesquite bushes, cactus, shrub, brush. Ahead, standing like a lonely outpost sentinel, was a giant saguaro cactus, almost 50 feet high. Hernandez lowered the car and stopped in the shade of the cactus. "Stretch your legs if you want, amigo. This is the last stop before Hermosillo." Hernandez got out, walked around the car, and opened the door for his prisoner. Morgan slipped out and stood stretching like a cat. While the Mexican was relieving himself against the cactus, Morgan walked over to what had first appeared to be a crude cross stuck in the sand. He peered at it. The cross was only a sign, weather-beaten and pockmarked by the talons of vultures who had used it as a roosting place. Hernandez strolled over and joined him. He too stared at the sign, his lips pursed in puzzlement under his black mustache. "Linaculan, 120 kilometers. I did not know there was a road." Then he brightened. "Ah, see, I remember now. This must be the old Real Militar, the military highway, leading from the interior to the east coast." That was all Morgan needed to know. If Linaculan was on the east coast, then Linaculan meant freedom. He yawned again, his impassive face a portrait of indifference. "Ready, amigo?" Morgan nodded. "As ready as any man is to be hung." The Mexican laughed, coughed, and spat in the dust. "Come on, then." He led the way towards the car and stood by its open door, waiting for his prisoner. Morgan shambled towards him, his shoulders slumped forward as if protecting him from the oppressive heat of late afternoon. When he did move, it was a snake strikes an unsuspecting victim. His manacled hands came down viciously on top of Fernandez's head. The policeman moaned and toppled to the ground. Morgan was on him immediately, his hands seeking and finding the gun he knew was in the Mexican's waistband. Then he stood upright, about 4 paces away from the figure on the ground. Hernandez shook his head groggily, blinked his eyes, and started to rise. He had struggled to his knees when Morgan's cold voice froze him into immobility. Morgan said, "Goodbye, Hernandez. No hard feelings." The Mexican looked up. He saw death. "Dios, Dios, no." That was as far as he got. The .44 slug caught him above the ridge of the left eye, and he was thrown 10 feet backwards by the force of the bullet. He shuddered once, his legs beat a small tattoo in the dust, and then he was still. Morgan walked over, shaking his head mournfully. "I sure had you pegged wrong. You didn't look like a coward who would beg for his life." He sat at the dead man's lack of dignity, feeling almost as if he had been betrayed by a weak-willed friend. He squatted and began searching the body. There was a wallet containing a badge, 500 pesos, and a color photograph of an overweight Mexican woman surrounded by 3 laughing small girls and 2 self-consciously grinning young boys. Morgan grunted noncommittally and continued his search. He found the handcuff keys taped to the calloused white soles of the dead man's foot. Twilight was beginning to turn the Mexican hills to a red bronze when Morgan loaded Hernandez in the trunk of the car. He rolled back over to the roadside. After the mileage, there were the words, "Cuidado, peligroso." Take heed, dangerous. What a joke, he thought. Could anything be more dangerous than being hung? Or playing the part of a fox hounded by international police? He had been trapped and sentenced to die 4 different times in his life, and yet he was still a free man, and there could be nothing, absolutely nothing, ahead of him on this insignificant little dirt road that could match Morgan's wits, Morgan's reactions, Morgan's gun. He got behind the wheel of the car and turned onto the road. It was rougher than it had appeared at first, but nonetheless, he made good time for the first 30 miles and was able to drive fast enough that the dust remained spread out behind him like the brown tail of a comet hanging luminously in the fading light. The sun dropped below the horizon line, but then, as Morgan began climbing the range of hills, it came back into sight once more, looking like the malevolent, inflamed eye of a god angry at being awakened again. Morgan crested the hill and began a downward ascent into a valley. Here darkness was embracing the land. He stopped once where a barranca sloped down from the road and threw over Hernandez's body. He watched it rolling and tumbling until it finally disappeared from sight in the black shadows beneath a strand of mesquite bushes some 100 feet below at the bottom. Morgan drove on. He turned on the car lights as night closed in swiftly around him. Abruptly, as he reached the valley floor, he began cursing, for the road was really no longer a road, just a scar and broken path leading across the wilderness. The next 5 kilometers took at least 15,000 miles out of the automobile. Morgan was forced to shift down to first gears, potholes, deep as wading pools, wrecked the front end alignment and suspension system. Jagged hidden boulders in the middle of the road scraped at the undercarriage with 1,000 steel fingers. And dust. Dust was everywhere. It hung like a dark, ominous cloud all about him. It coated the inside of the car as though it were beige velvet. It crept into Morgan's nostrils and throat until it became painful to breathe or swallow. Minutes later, over the smell of dust came the odor of hot water, steam, and he knew the cooling system had ruptured somewhere. It was then Morgan realized the car would never make it to Lina Kulan. By the last barely perceptible horizon glow, he searched the landscape for some evidence of life and saw only the grotesque silhouettes of cactus and stunted desert brush. The speedometer indicated they had traveled 44 miles when his bouncing, weaving headlights picked up the solitary figure of a priest walking slowly alongside the road. Morgan's eyes narrowed as he weighed the value of offering a ride to the padre. That would be stupid, he thought. The man could be a bandido who would produce and skillfully use a knife while Morgan was concentrating on the road. The bother loomed up larger in the headlights. He did not turn towards the car. It seemed as though he were totally unaware of the car's approach. Morgan passed without slowing. The figure was lost immediately in the dust and blackness of the Mexican night. Suddenly, just as though several automatic relays had clicked open somewhere in his brain, all of Morgan's instincts were screaming at him. Something was wrong. Terribly wrong. A trap of some sort had been entered. The feeling was familiar. There had been other traps before. He grinned wryly, pulled the gun from his pocket, and laid it on the seat beside him in preparation. The next 3 miles seemed endless as he waited, almost eagerly for the trap to swing shut. When nothing happened, he grew irritable and began cursing his imagination. The smell of hot oil and steam had grown humidly overpowering, and the engine was beginning to labor. Morgan glanced down at the temperature gauge and saw the needle had long since climbed into the red danger zone. And it was at this moment, while his attention was distracted, that the left front wheel slammed into a jagged rock which ripped through the tire's sidewall. The vehicle began bucking and weaving from side to side like a wild, enraged, injured animal. Morgan hit his brakes, knowing it was too late. The car skidded sideways on the gravel, swerved to the right, teetered for a second on an embankment, and then, almost as if it were a movie being projected in slow motion, rolled end over end down the incline. The last thing Morgan saw was a monstrous boulder looking up in the night like some huge basalt fist of God. For a long time after he regained consciousness, Morgan lay still with his eyes closed. Someone had wiped his forehead and spoken to him. A man, possibly the priest? He listened to the man's coarse breathing. There was no other sound. They were alone. Morgan opened his eyes. It was dark, but not as dark as before. A little moonlight was seeping through the high, thin clouds. The priest, black of clothes and dark of face, was beside him. "Señor, you are all right?" Morgan flexed his leg muscles, moved his ankles, moved his shoulders, and turned his head from side to side. There were no aches, no pain. He felt surprisingly good. Well, no sense of letting the other man know. That the priest believed Morgan had injured his back and was incapable of rapid movement. Then, when he had to move fast, the other would be unprepared. "I hurt my back." "Can you stand?" "Yes, I think so. Help me." The priest reached out. Morgan took the proffered hand and groaned audibly and stood erect. "You're fortunate that I came along." "Yes, I'm grateful." Morgan felt in his pocket. The wallet was still there. The gun was gone. Or had it been in the pocket? Then he remembered it had been on the seat beside him. Well, no chance of finding it in the darkness. And there would be other weapons. "Where were you going?" the priest asked. "Lina Kulan." "Oh, yes, a fine city." The priest was standing quite close to Morgan, staring at the American. The moon slipped in and out of the clouds. There was a moment of light, only a moment, but enough. Suddenly, for the first time in many years, Morgan was afraid, frightened by the padre's eyes. They were too black, too piercing, too fierce for a priest. Morgan stepped back 3 paces, far enough away from the priest that the other man's eyes were lost in the darkness. "You need not fear me," the priest said quietly. "I cannot harm you. I can only help you." It sounded sincere. Some of Morgan's nervousness began to abate. Mentally, he sniffed the wind. The odor of the trap was there, but not as strong as before. After a few moments, some of his old cockiness returned. "Where do we go from here?" he thought. He was at least halfway towards Lina Kulan, so it would seem prudent to continue on unless there would be other transportation before then. Morgan asked, "Is Lina Kulan the nearest town?" "Yes." "Is that where you are going?" "No." "Hopefully then. Do you have a church nearby?" "No, but I frequently trod this road." "For Christ's sake, why walk this miserable road?" "For the very reason you mentioned. For Christ's sake." Now Morgan was completely at ease. The padre was harmless. A nut, but harmless. "Well," he said almost jauntily, "I've got a long walk ahead of me. See you." Morgan thought. He saw the priest's expression soften with a remark. "I will walk part way with you." "Suit yourself, padre. My name's Dan Morgan. I'm an American." "Yes, I know." The answer surprised Morgan for a moment. Then he felt his guard rising again. Obviously the priest had gone through his belongings while he was unconscious, and perhaps that was where the gun had gone to. They began walking in silence, the moon, that alien globe of cold white light, won its battle with the clouds and now shone brightly behind them. Long slender shadows raced along the road in front of the two men. The folds of the padre's cassock made whispering noises with each stride he took. His sandals went slap, slap, slap in the thick dust of the road. In an effort to make conversation, Morgan asked, "How far is Lina Coulon from here?" "A great distance." "But," Morgan exploded, "I thought it was only about another 50 kilometers. "The candlelights of Lina Coulon are 54 kilometers from the point of your crash." "Well, that was nice to know anyway. With luck, Morgan can make the 30 miles by tomorrow afternoon, and then it would be a simple matter to get another car." He began taking longer strides. The priest kept pace beside him. In time, the moon was cut off by a range of hills, and their shadows disappeared. The darkness that came in around them now was a tangible thing, warm, disquieting, fearful as the interior of a locked coffin. Morgan glanced at his watch. It had stopped at 8:18. Apparently, something snapped when the crash occurred. He didn't know how long he had been unconscious, but they had been walking for at least 2 hours, so perhaps it was around midnight. They plodded on, two dark figures, shadows almost, walking a desolate road. They climbed a short hill and were bathed in moonlight again. Morgan liked that. The darkness had been too dark. It seemed to him there were things, unseen, unreal, out there beyond the moonlight. They started down the other side of the hill, and the darkness crept back. "Don't you have any lights at all in this godforsaken place?" Morgan asked irritably. The padre did not answer. Morgan repeated the question, and his voice was full of frustrated threat. Still there was no reply. Morgan shrugged and mentally said, "To hell with you, my sullen Catholic friend. I'll take care of you later." The road led down the far side of the hill. Night, the true, horribly oppressive night of the claustrophobiac, closed in menacingly. They were in a gully for a long time before reaching another hill. This time no moonlight greeted them. The only illumination was a hollow glow from behind the horizon clouds. It was enough, though, to show a fork in the road. Morgan hesitated and asked, "Which one goes to Lina Coulon?" The priest stopped. The fierce black pupils of his eyes had grown large, so large, in fact, there seemed to be no longer any white to his eyes at all. He stretched out his arms to adjust his cassock, and at that moment he looked like some evil black praying mantis about to devour a victim. Even in the semi-darkness he cast a shadow, a black elongated shadow of the cross. And now the cornered killer instinct took hold of Morgan. "Answer my question," he snarled. "Which way to Lina Coulon?" "Have you so little faith?" Morgan's voice was shaking for it. "Listen, you surly bastard. You've refused to answer my questions, or even make conversation. What does faith have to do with it? Just tell me how much farther I have to go to get to Lina Coulon. That's all I want from you. No psalm singing, no preaching, nothing. Understand?" "You still have a great distance to go." His voice trailed off, and Morgan sensed a change in the padre's attitude. A moment later, Morgan heard it too, the far-off drumbeat of a horse's hooves. The moon, as if curious, parted the clouds for the last time. There was only a shadow moving across the landscape at first, but as the horse came nearer, Morgan could see the animal, its mane and tail rippling like black flags straining at their halyards. It was a magnificent beast, quite the largest he had ever seen, coal black as the midnight and spirited as a thunderhead. What really took Morgan's breath away, however, was the girl. She rode the animal as though she were an integral part of it. The moonlight played with her, for she was dressed completely in white, from boots and jodhpurs to the form-fitting long-sleeved blouse and Spanish grandee hat. Her hair, though, was black, black as a raven's wing, and it hung like a soft ebony cloud from her shoulders. Savagely she reined the stallion to a halt in front of the two men. The horse reared. Morgan jumped back nervously, but the priest stood his ground. "Well, padre," she said, smiling, and at the same time slapping her jodhpurs with a riding whip, "I see you have taken another unfortunate under your wing." She put an odd emphasis on the word unfortunate. Morgan didn't know whether to be angry or puzzled. He waited silently, watching the dramatic byplay going on between the two people. Perhaps the entire thing was elaborately staged, all part of the trap. It was of no matter. There was no immediate danger to him. So for the moment, he was content to merely stand and enjoy the woman's proud body. In time, the girl became aware of Morgan's stare. Her own eyes, answering, were as bold and insolent as the man's. She threw back her head and laughed throatily. "You are in bad hands, my American friend." "This hombre here," she nodded contemptuously towards the priest, "is called old bad luck among my people. Each time he is on the road, there's an accident. You have had trouble tonight, no?" Morgan nodded once and then glanced sideways at the priest. The father, however, was watching the girl. She laughed under scrutiny. "Don't look so angry, old man. You can't frighten me. Why don't you run along now? I'll see that our American friend reaches his destination." The priest held out his hand to Morgan. "You must not go with her. She is evil. Evil personified." He made three crosses in the air. There was no doubt in Morgan's mind about his decision. The padre had said she was evil. Coming from a priest, that was a real recommendation. Besides, only an idiot would continue to walk the dark road when there was a chance to ride, a chance for pleasant conversation, a chance, really a promise if he had correctly interpreted her look, of even more. He hesitated, still a wild, hunted animal wary of the trap. The girl gently patted the sweating neck of her horse. "Where were you going?" "Lina Kulan," Morgan answered. "That isn't too far away. Come on, I'll give you a ride to Mitlantecuhtli's ranch. You can call for help from there." Her lips were half parted. She seemed almost breathless as she awaited his answer. Morgan turned to the priest. "Well, thanks for the company, padre. See you around sometime." The priest took two quick steps towards Morgan and put out his arms, beseeching. "Stay at my side. She is evil, I say." The girl laughed aloud. "It's two against one, churchman. You've lost another victim." "Victim?" Morgan's eyes narrowed. He'd been right about the old devil all along. But something was ringing false. Then it came to him. If the father was a thief and a murderer, why hadn't he done the job when Morgan was unconscious? The priest gazed back over his shoulder towards the setting moon. It would be dark within seconds now. He reached inside his cassock and withdrew an ivory cross about 8 or 10 inches high. "The night is coming. Hold on to the cross. Believe me. Do not go to Mitlantecuhtli. I am your last chance." "Go on. Get away from him, you old fool," the girl shouted. "The authorities should take care of you idiots who molest and frighten travelers on this road and prevent them from reaching their destination." The priest paid no heed to the girl. He implored Morgan once again, and this time his voice was strong as he watched the last red lip of the moon disappear below a hill. "There still is time." The girl viciously pulled back on the reins and dug her spurs into the horse's flank. It screamed in rage and reared its front hooves, blotting out the stars. When back on all fours, the stallion was between Morgan and the priest. Her face was a soft glow as she smiled and withdrew a boot from the stirrups. "Come, my friend, place your foot here. Vault up behind me." She reached out a helping hand, and as she bent over, her blouse gaped open slightly. Morgan grinned and took her hand. He pulled himself astride the horse. "Put your arms around me and hold on," she ordered. Morgan did so happily. Her body was supple, delightful to hold, and the faint scent of some exotic perfume wafted back to him from her hair. He gazed down at the priest. The old man's face was once more unfathomable. "So long, padre. Don't take any wooden pesos." The girl did not wait for an answer. She raked the flank of the horse with her spurs, and the beast tore out into the night. "Hold tight," she shouted. "Hold tight." They rode at breakneck speed for almost 10 minutes before she reined the stallion to a walk. With their pace slowed, Morgan became aware of the girl's body again, and desire built up rapidly inside of him. It had been a long time. There was no one around to stop him, and the girl had shown a spirited wantonness that led him to believe she would welcome his advances. They rode with only the horse breathing and clip-clop of the horse and the creak of their saddle breaking the silence. His hand began to ride higher and higher in her ribcage. She made no protest, so he became bolder. Finally, he could feel the soft flesh of her breast beneath the silk blouse. It was easier than Morgan had ever believed possible. She simply reined in the horse and turned partially around. "We can stop here, if you want." Morgan's voice was guttural, his body pounding in desire as he said, "Yeah, I want." She slid from the horse, and Morgan was beside her immediately. Her arms went around his neck, lips met in a brutal, bruisingly parody of love. Her fingernails dug into his shoulders as his hands sought immediate, demanding familiarity with her body. She moaned deep in her throat as Morgan fumbled with her clothes, and then, with only the disinterested horse grazing nearby and the brittle eyes of the stars glittering as they watched, their bodies joined in a violent collusion of hot, implacable lust. Morgan could feel the lassitude of his body when he awakened. That was his first impression. His second impression was that he was still embracing the girl. The third, an overpowering, horrible odor of putrefaction. He opened his eyes and screamed. It was a scream wrenched involuntarily from his soul, for there in a faint light of an approaching dawn he could see that he was holding in his arms the rotting cadaver of a woman, a body from which the flesh was peeling in great huge strips like rotten liver, from which the death grimace revealed crooked brown teeth and eyeless sockets. Morgan whimpered and jumped to his feet. His heart was hammering as though it were about to fly from his body like some overtaxed runaway machine that explodes into pieces. His breath came in deep, animal-like pants of fright, and his eyes darted frantically around like those of a madman tormented by phantoms. I, he panted. It was all he could say. He began running down the road. He felt twice, painfully ripping open his legs and hands on the rocky surface of the land. I. And then the words he wanted most to say came spilling out. Help me, someone, help me. He heard the horse's hooves behind him. It was the girl. She was alive and whole. She smiled reassuringly. Where did you go? She asked. And then she grinned impishly. Where are your clothes? I, Morgan could not speak. Come, she said. Morgan shook his head. He could not marshal his thoughts, but this much was certain. He knew he was not going with the girl. Come. And this time it was an imperative command. The girl was no longer amused at his nudity, his frightened inarticulateness. Morgan willed himself to turn and run away, but his body did not respond to his mental orders. Instead, like a mindless zombie, he mounted the horse. That's better, the girl said soothingly. Of course you should have put on your clothes, but it doesn't matter. She glanced towards the east. Night is almost gone. We must hurry. There is something I want you to see before we get to meet Lankutuli's ranch. She slapped the stallion with her whip, and the animal began chasing the blackness of the night. Now behind them, the sky definitely was beginning to lighten as dawn came to the Mexican desert. In the near light of the new day, Morgan could see a landmark that looked familiar. And then off the road at the bottom of the ravine, he saw his car. Gingerly, the horse picked its way down the slope until they were beside the wrecked vehicle. Ugly, red-necked vultures screamed and flapped their wings as the horse approached. Several were fighting over what appeared to be elongated white ropes hanging out of the car window. A few of the birds took to the air. The rest, arrogant and unafraid, moved over a few reluctant steps away. But, what are they doing here? Morgan asked. There was no one in the car but me. He could feel the girl's body shaking in silent laughter. She pointed. By squinting his eyes, Morgan could make out the figure impaled on the steering wheel post. The cold, undulating horror he had felt earlier closed in around him again. The body was familiar. Too familiar. Morgan whimpered as the girl urged the stallion closer. The vultures had gone for the eyes first, as they usually do. The entrails of the dead man hung out the open window, and these had been the reason for fighting among the birds. Morgan saw the clothes. The dead man was dressed the same as he had been. He wore the same shaped wristwatch. What terrifying nightmare was this? Awaken! Wake up! Wake up! He mentally shouted. But the nightmare, more real than life itself, remained. The dead man was Morgan. There could be no doubt about it. Morgan's mind was forced in a corner by the realization. His sanity backed away from the fact. He began to lose all control. He screamed, the scream of a demented lunatic. At his cry, the girl shouted and whipped at the stallion. The horse scrambled up the side of the ravine. There in the roadway stood the priest. "Help me, Father, help me! God, help me!" Morgan mumbled, the saliva trickling slowly from both sides of his lax mouth. "You made your choice. I am sorry." "But I did not know what Mictlan Cthulhu was." "Mictlan Cthulhu is known by many names. Diabolo, Satan, Devil, Lucifer, Mephistopheles. The particular name of evil is never important, for the precepts are the same in every country. You have embraced evil. You have made your last earthly choice. I am powerless now to aid you. Goodbye." He felt and heard the girl's laughter, shrill, maniacal, satisfied. Her whip bit into the horse's neck, and her spurs drew blood. They tore down the road, galloping, galloping, galloping towards the night. The stench was back again, and shreds of the girl's flesh began slowing off in the wind. She turned, slowly this time, and Morgan saw the horrible grinning expression of a skeleton. He twisted around, unable to face the apparition, and cried out once more for the priest. Far back in the distance, as if he were viewing something in another world, Morgan could see the Padre's solitary figure at the top of a hill, plodding towards the east, the rising sun, and a new day. When Morgan turned back again, weeping, and knowing now the desperate futility of hope, they had already reached the edge of night, and the oppressive darkness reached out to engulf them.